Hey, it's Dr. Jamie, and let me tell you about some amazing beef products that we love in our house. Certified Piedmontese is a healthier beef option that doesn't sacrifice flavor or tenderness. The cattle at Piedmontese are raised responsibly and carefully on family ranches across the Midwest, and they're healthier too. They're never given antibiotics, steroids, or hormones. They raise the rare Piedmontese breed through a ranch-to-fork approach that ensures traceability, environmental sustainability, humane animal handling, and responsible resource management at every step. Countless well-known chefs from across the country rave about the exceptional quality and flavor profile of Certified Piedmontese beef. The Certified Piedmontese program is a source-verified ranch-to-fork operation that's rooted in dedication to the land, ranchers, cattle, consumers, and products. Progressive ranching protocols such as the electronic identification tagging technology, database tracking initiatives, DNA testing to confirm heritage, and voluntary third-party audits ensure the beef meets the high standards of care, handling, and quality. Certified Piedmontese beef has fewer calories, less fat, and higher protein per ounce than beef from any other breed, making it an ideal source of lean protein for a healthy diet. A serving of Certified Piedmontese beef has even fewer calories ounce for ounce than salmon, yet it challenges the prime grade beef products in tenderness. The combination of leanness and tenderness results in a consistently healthy and delicious dining experience for those who will not settle for anything less. And well, you guys, that's me. So go check out Certified Piedmontese. They have a Dr. Fit and Fabulous beef box, or you can order any of their products using my code DRFIT, DRFIT. Thank you, Certified Piedmontese. To the Fit and Fabulous podcast with Dr. Jamie Seaman. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Jamie, and welcome back to the Fit and Fabulous podcast. I am so excited that you're here today because I have an incredible guest, and we're talking about a topic that doesn't get talked about in medicine that really could change your life and the life of so many people around you. So I want you to really tune in today. My guest today is Dr. Sean O'Mara. He grew up in Fairfax, Virginia. After graduating from high school, he went to community college to study law enforcement, worked as a police officer in both narcotics and organized crime. He graduated with high honors from Penn State and then went on to attend Villanova University in law. He practiced for 3 years as a criminal prosecutor. He then trained as an emergency medicine physician during his time in the U.S. Army Medical Corps. While on active duty, he provided medical support to some of our presidents and dignitaries. And today, Dr. O'Mara is the only physician in the world practicing health and performance optimization. He works with individuals and corporations that are motivated to improve outcome through innovative and effective techniques for biological enhancement. He loves working with really motivated people, don't we all? Such as business executives, professional performers, athletes, people whose livelihood is predicated upon performance. He lives in Minneapolis, Minnesota. He's got 5 children. He's married to his wife, Julie, and he currently serves as Lieutenant Colonel in the Minnesota Army National Guard. What an incredible bio. Dr. O'Mara, welcome to the Fit and Fabulous podcast.
Well, great to be with you finally. I'm super excited to have discussions about health and to be with your audience. So this is great.
Okay, so how does one go from being in law enforcement to then being a lawyer to then being an emergency medicine doctor?
Well, I guess I was always looking for something I could be really passionate about. And I thought I found it in law enforcement and then became a criminal prosecutor, which is really a law enforcement position. But I was sort of stymied by the political realities of the criminal justice system. You really can't do what you really want to do. You're constrained by politics. And I felt that was really difficult for me, for somebody wanting to always do the right thing. So I realized I had this longing for science and medicine. I really wanted to be a physician when I was younger and got sidetracked because my dad was killed by a drunk driver, and I got sidetracked into law enforcement trying to change the criminal justice system. And so I recognized if I went into to medicine, I could take care of patients the way I wanted to without politics. And it's better than law, but it's not quite...
I'm going to say, there's a few politics in medicine.
Yeah, a lot of politics in medicine. So you know, I've got out of the system, and I practice now on my own, on the side, just taking care of people to optimize them and really free ways without being constrained by insurance. I work with people that will pay out of pocket to improve their health instead of, you know, I still wonder why people are so constrained by insurance. You know, if it's not going to be covered by insurance, they're not going to do something. Why? It's your body. It's the most important thing. And insurance companies are not in your corner. So do not pay attention to what they'll pay for. If you know you should be doing something and you need something, you have just got to do it. Don't listen to what the insurance company policies are to make decisions about your most important physical asset, which is your body.
That's such a good point, because I feel like if somebody's car was broken, they're going to pay to fix it. Like, they need it. But so many times we just neglect our own health. And oh yeah, I mean, it's incredible what insurance companies will and won't pay for. And most of the time they're really not paying for things that are helpful. I was just debating this with my mother last night. She was very mad that Medicare wouldn't pay for vitamin D screening. And they'll only pay for it if you have a documented vitamin D deficiency. Well, somebody has to be the first person to check that and find that it's low. It's just crazy. So yes, obviously,
I like not working with insurance companies and just working one-on-one with individuals who want to work to, you know, optimize themselves. So it works a lot better than that. And so, you know, we need to be encouraging our patients to have that kind of mindset.
Yeah. So for people listening, so you have a concierge practice, basically. Is that right? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. Well, I actually used to run this very high-end concierge practice. And I know it sounds incredible, but, you know, we were building these $100 million private hospitals underneath billionaires' homes or royal families' homes. And it was all reactionary. You know, these people would throw Snickers down their mouths, you know, beignets and croissants and, you know, get, you know, enormously unhealthy. But it was all a reactionary model. Even when they could pay for it, they wouldn't do anything to prevent themselves. So now I'm in a space where I just work with people who truly want to get better. And I actually find it's not the uber wealthy people. It's the people kind of, and it's not the real, the people at the bottom. It's the people kind of in the middle. So middle comers, which is a huge part of our population. And so now I work with those individuals, particularly leveraging alpha traits. So, you know, it's kind of a primal model. You know, we are biologically hunter and gatherers. And so the best hunter was the leader of the hunt, and they often turned out to be the chief of the tribe. And they just had to perform. They had to bring home, they had to organize that hunt, be at the top. So I look for those alpha traits because they're the best to study. You know, I don't have to get in a big argument with them to convince them that they got to give up, you know, drinking beer and chips and processed foods. They're all about whatever it takes to optimize themselves. So they're very efficient to study. There's not a lot of explaining that I have to do. So I only have so much time available to study people and work with them. So working with those that are going to have the best results make it a lot more efficient form of practice. So I don't really do concierge anymore. I represent myself as a health and performance optimizing physician. So I work to literally improve the level of health by identifying the best biomarkers inside the human body and outside the human body based on about 10 years of research for the National Science Foundation, where we were purposing to reverse chronic disease. So we went out and looked for the most effective things inside the body, and we centered on this biomarker of visceral fat. And we worked to eradicate it. And then we tried out different strategies to get rid of it. Then we tracked what impact that had with regard to chronic disease. So we ended up scanning over 6,000 people and tracking the chronic disease when visceral fat was eliminated. And I'm super excited to let people know that every form of chronic disease that was tracked in these people across 6,000 people either went got better or went completely away linearly to the extent that they got rid of visceral fat. So I am not aware of a single target or objective in all of medicine that will improve somebody better than the elimination of visceral fat. So you should look at your visceral fat, get rid of it, get super excited and interested in it, and work to have it completely eliminated and see what happens in your life.
Okay, so we're talking about visceral fat as kind of a biomarker. How do you define health for these people, for this 1%, these alpha people who come to see you? I mean, how do you define health? Is it their performance? Is it these biomarkers? Is it a combination of the two?
Yeah. So I've centered in on an equation or a definition of health that I define as simply your appearance and your performance. And again, that has kind of a primal ancestral background. So how you look and how you perform are the two critical things when it comes down to living. So you want to look good because you want, throughout humanity, you wanted to be able to influence other people to be awesome. You can't do that if you yourself look unhealthy, but it's not enough to look good. You've got to bring home that bacon. You've got to be a high performer, a high producer. So the alpha in our society and throughout the existence of humanity worked to look good and perform well. So I now kind of center on those two factors, and then I numerically quantify these things through what I call key biological indicators. So companies, American Commerce dominates across the globe, being the largest and best companies, because we've centered and leveraged an interesting metric called key performance indicators, KPI. And CEOs, C-levels, and executives within companies improve the health of that company by tracking KPI. And that's how commerce just blows off the map. Every other company, American Commerce, because we're so good at KPI. But you got to track what matters, and you got to do the right thing to improve that. I've just figured out that's what's wrong with healthcare. We don't track what matters. We haven't figured out what really works, and we don't work to improve that. So instead of calling it KPI, I call it key biological indicators. So it's visceral fat, it's pericardial fat, it's muscle to fat ratios, and it's also the appearance of the face, the shape of the face, the shape of the body, the shape and tonicity of muscles. And those are your KPI combined with your KPI, key performance indicators, or how well you perform. So right away, you're nailing KPI. All your competition, your shows that you've been on, you're a high performer, and your appearance is fantastic. So your level of health is extraordinary. So were I to quantify KPI and KPI, you'd be hitting it out of the ballpark. So that's what we need to do, I think, as health optimizing physicians. And by the way, I'm the only one really in this space so far, but you're welcome to join me. Health and performance optimization really is very quantifiable. And these targets are something that we can measure and track. And in my opinion, we should be doing that. Like here, you know, we have role models for everything. If you think about it, Jimmy, we have role models for the best NBA, basketball players, football players, singers, actors, artists. We know who are the best across, you know, the best attorneys, the best violinist players across the board. And these people become role models. Let me ask you a question. Who's your role model for health? No little boy or little girl could stand up and say, I want to be like this really healthy man or woman. But here's an interesting idea. What if we had a contest of the world's healthiest man and the world's healthiest woman? Can you feel all the alphas moving towards that contest? Extraordinary. And we could model them.
Sign up. Yeah.
And promote this. And that's what we need to do. There's very little promotion when it comes across, you know, education, in school, high school, junior high, elementary school, in companies to model health. And being healthy is really cool. And that's what we ought to be doing. And it's sorely missing today. It's just kind of getting started in social media. And so that's why I'm excited to be being in social media right now to try to influence the younger generations to become really interested in health optimization. But yeah, that's what I'm working to do, to try to identify the best Models for Health. And it's my passion is to work with people who really want to get healthy and really perform better, really get healthy and really perform better. And the performance came actually from our studies when we were doing this for the National Science Foundation. We got rid of disease. The most exciting thing we saw, and I wasn't ready for this, is that human performance improved across all the metrics. So everybody started to perform better at their jobs and everything else that we were tracking. It was fascinating. So I'm excited to say that I think portends well for American commerce, because as soon as C-levels and large corporations realize when they truly get their employees more healthy, they're going to be more productive and perform better, then I think they're going to embrace and get behind health optimization. And we're going to see real corporate wellness go to a new level and step, fooling around with cholesterol and weight loss and these other kind of nebulous metrics that have really bad signal to noise ratio. So, you know, signal is tracking what really matters, and noise is what doesn't matter. It's kind of distraction. So as researchers, we want to identify the best targets with the highest amount of signal and the lowest amount of ratio. And that's why cholesterol sucks, because it's just got, it's filled with too much noise. I mean, I don't want to get into a cholesterol debate, because it's just a poor metric to undermine your health. Here's the thing. You've never found or seen a single patient anywhere says, I got my cholesterol under control and it completely changed my life. Doesn't happen, but you get rid of visceral fats. You know, you work on other targets and people's lives completely change. So it's identifying these targets that really bring about beneficial change that I think is super important.
Yeah, I actually had a family member who has been on statin medications, has controlled the cholesterol number for 20, 30 something years, found out recently they have a CAC score that's off the map. I mean, 1300, something like that, tons of visceral fat. Now they have prediabetes. It's like, but it's hard to explain that to patients. Okay, something was kind of resonating with me. I think it's so interesting when you talk about appearance, because I think if you put out a bunch of pictures and pulled people, like, what does healthy look like? And I think that I recently did this bodybuilding competition, and people idolize that physique, that just completely lean, shredded looking, you know, physique. Like, I think that's what people think strong and healthy looks like. And I'll tell you right now, that's not super healthy. And the way that a lot of those people achieve that is definitely not healthy. But I always say, when I go into an exam room, that within 10 seconds of sitting in front of the patient and looking at them, I can already kind of see what their issues are. And my nurse practitioner and I also, without looking at the patient's age, you know, you kind of walk in, you're like, how old does this person look? And then you look at their age, and if it's either over or under, you're like, okay, something's not right here. I think there's so much to that we undervalue. You can just walk around the grocery store and you can pick out the people that have metabolic disease. You know, their complexion's horrible. I mean, visually, obviously, people, you can see subcutaneous fat, visceral fat. I've seen some people be surprised, you know, when we've scanned them, but sometimes you can see that really kind of, you know, protruding belly. So I think that's an interesting thing you bring up, kind of using this appearance as an indicator. And I do think that's what patients want, right? They're coming in and they're like, well, I just want to lose 10 pounds. Like, I want to see my bicep. Like, they want that, but I don't know if they understand what it takes to achieve that. So I think that's super interesting. So let's get into these biometrics and biomarkers. Can you tell people, maybe there's somebody listening that has no idea what visceral fat is. Can you kind of explain the most basic version of what visceral fat is and how you measure it and how you think it's best to be measured?
So right in the outset, I like to encourage people to jump on Google and just put in visceral fat, dangerous visceral fat, harmful, and develop a relationship and understanding and awareness on your own. So I can tell you those things, but you got to go out and look at them. And there's lots of articles and lots of studies. You can go on PubMed, you go on sciencedaily.com, type in visceral fat and see all these interesting studies and important findings about visceral fat. But the long and short of it is, we now think in a modern perspective about visceral fat that it's like a gland. It's a substance. It's got access to the vasculature system. It secretes actively these cytokines and inflammatory molecules that go throughout the body, causing damage and injury to tissues. But calling a gland, I have a little bit of a problem with, because it almost implies that it has a biological functional purpose, like it's some way beneficial. And it's not. I like to call it a parasitic alien inside your body that is destroying you. It's the source of all that is bad and biologically ruinous for your health. And so having an awareness that it's this collection of fat that's deep in your belly that you cannot see, the only way to be aware of it is to do an abdominal MRI scan or a CT scan. You can do a DEXA scan. It will quantify it numerically. But again, you want to visualize it because, you know, there's a study that recently came out and says that physicians who go through X-ray studies and radiology studies with patients have better results in those patients if they show them and explain them, as opposed to just reading them a CT report says your adenoid came back fine, or your adenoid came back and showed you have diverticulitis or something. You know, walking them through and visualizing that is a lot important. I remember in med school, a physician, a professor, calling out of a formaldehyde jar a big colon of a patient that died from diverticulitis. That thing was so nasty looking with all those ticks that I was like, dang, I never want to get whatever the heck that diverticulitis was. It was one of my first lectures in med school. But it's that visual impact has a lot more meaning than a report. And for most of my career as an emergency med physician, I didn't show X-rays to people. I do today, still practice emergency medicine side to keep my skills up. But now I walk people through CTs and MRIs and X-rays, and I show them because this study came out recently this year that shows that it really has a lot more impact than showing them a particular number. So I like to do those scans, and I like to open patients to the reality, and I don't just give them quantified. We used to have software that we wrote, Jamie, that quantified the amount of visceral fat inside of people, but that number just wasn't as much, didn't have as much meaning. I said that, I will tell you that I think the future is going to be, we won't have to do MRIs and CTs, because over the course of doing 6,000 abdominal CTs or MRIs on people, I got to read visceral fat. I could see it's in fact, like you said, when you walk in the room with somebody, you form within 10 seconds, you had a good clinical read on what was going on. Well, I got the same thing. People could walk into our clinic and I could look at visceral fat's influence in their face even before they had the MRI. And I got to be able to predict the amount of visceral fat within ounces. It was incredible. Within ounces, I could predict how much visceral fat somebody had just by looking at their face. So now I was so intrigued at my experience of years doing that I'm working to collect facial photographs for the purposes of doing machine learning, artificial intelligence, so that the machine can learn to read visceral fat, and it will be able to pick it up way better than ounces, probably down to grams with time as we do that. So the future is, I don't think we're going to be relying upon numbers. I think it's going to be imagery. And for 4 million years, Jamie, we didn't have lab studies. We didn't have numbers. We didn't have those kind of values. We just had the medicine woman, the medicine man, our relatives who would look at us and say, you need to go out and do some more sprinting. You got to climb some more trees. You got to go lift some rocks or something. You got to bust your butt more on the hunt. You got to stop eating so many figs and dates, different things. And we always improved. Every generation, Homo sapiens improved. Now, all our tests, all our laboratory values, and we got skyrocketing chronic disease, skyrocketing diabetes, skyrocketing obesity, in spite of having all these tests. So our answer is not going to be in numbers and looking at blood tests and X-rays and radiological studies. But the MRI and CT today is a good transitional tool to bring awareness to people what to pay attention to, and then track the change in their body and their face. One of the things I would track are telangiectasias, spider veins. would completely reverse me, get rid of visceral fat, the onset improvement of vascularity. I think I saw in your husband's and your arms, big veins. I think I commented on the past, so vasculature improves. And the other interesting thing that happened to me and now happens to my clients to do this is the onset of visible pulses. So something, you know, we're always trained, check for a pulse. Well, ACL is, steps in the future will be not look for a pulse, but, you know, feel for, not feel for a pulse, but look for a pulse. Yeah. Because humans are meant to have visible pulses. And so I have visible pulses in 18 spots in my body. If I lay down, my belly is pushing up every time. That aorta, my myocardial squeeze, you know, pushes out. My soft aorta, with the absence of any fatty infiltrates and hardening, no hardening in my arteries, just causes this flash, this flare traveling through my abdomen, which is amazing. And I start with clients, they don't have that, and they end up getting it as they work on optimizing themselves. So I think paying attention to these changes in the body, these little nuances, are going to take us to new levels of health optimization in our profession.
That's fascinating. Okay, so obviously CT and MRI aren't widely available to everybody. I mean, you can't just walk in and get a test. How do people get access to these types of things, or what should they ask for if they want it?
Well, first of all, I would say go to a good physician like yourself and say, hey, I want to see what my visceral fat looks like. Can I get an MRI or CT? I prefer MRI because it's non-ionizing, so you don't have any concerns about radiation. And you, as an OB, would understand that. So I prefer an MRI. But you right now probably would get sweat on the palms of your hands at the notion of trying to justify an MRI, you know, on a patient. So the patient has to pay out of pocket. You know, suck it up, buttercup. You're going to have to pay cash for that MRI, because the insurance company is not going to approve a MRI, which is about $1,500, $2,000 to order an MRI. But if you pay cash, you should be able to get that for about $500 in most cities where you live. And if you can't get it for $500, come see me in Minnesota, and I'll be your physician, and I'll order that MRI for you so you can take a look at your visceral fat inside. So I recommend they just start with their doctor. Tell them I want to pay out of pocket. I don't want to go through insurance. Will you write an order for me to have an MRI? And that physician should be willing to do that. And I'll go so far to say, if you're listening today and you have that conversation with your physician and they won't do an MRI when you're willing to pay out of pocket for this, I think you need to look for a different physician to work with, because they don't understand visceral fat. And I'm sorry, to their defense, I have to defend them a little bit. We're not taught visceral fat in medical school, and we're not taught it in residency. You know, it's not, you know, we don't even read. I remember being next to this physician of 38 years who was reading this CT next to me, diagnosing pancreatic cancer. This guy is presenting with abdominal pain in the ER, and he's reading this. He was that good of a physician, and I wouldn't have picked up the pancreatic CA. And I said, well, I'm not surprised, because look at all that visceral fat that's inside him. So this old doctor is looking like this at the study, and he goes, where's the visceral fat? I go, it's all that black stuff on the
seat. Rest of it.
You know? And he's looking at it, and he goes, what black stuff? I said, it's all this. This is it. And he goes, and then he turns his head and he looks at me and goes, does this mean we should be tracking visceral fat instead of cholesterol? Bang. That guy got connected that fast. So the reality was, this guy's been reading CTs 38 years, looking past this incredible target of visceral fat, because he simply was never educated to it.
You always see what you're looking for.
Yeah. If you don't know, you don't know. Yeah. And the radiologists today just look right past visceral fat. In fact, I was on Twitter today, just incredible dismay over this radiologist who won't read visceral fat. None of them do. And questions the validity of it. Why do we want to read it? It's just inane to me. But it's just because he lacks familiarity with it as a target. He doesn't understand how beneficial it is when he gets rid of it. and how meaningful it is when a patient sees it instead of just, you know, reading about a particular number. So it would be nice if they would read the visceral fat and report it, and then a primary physician could see that there's a large amount of visceral fat, get and then walk the patient through so they can see what's inside their body. So I had last night, one of my clients, you know, sent me a text. He goes, "Oh, by the way, I took a picture of my visceral, of my scan, and I had a picture created and I framed it along with your Olympic sprinter's abdominal scan, who's got the best MRI I've ever seen, Jamie. I'll have to privately send it to you. But this guy has the healthiest abdomen muscle to fat ratios of any human being I've ever seen in the world." And so this client took that guy's picture, his own scan, got framed photographs and hung it in his bathroom every day in the mirror so he can see it to be inspired by it. So that kind of reflects how influential, you know, visceral fat is, that metric to really help people to get motivated to change. So it really is an exciting thing to share with physicians, any other physicians out there, nurse practitioners, mid-levels, listening to your podcast today, and your audience. I mean, their patients, they should be walking into their providers, just like you say, and asking for it. And then go back and look, if you've ever had a CT in the past, and there are a lot of people listening right now, because we just scan the Hades out of people and they come to the ER.
Yeah. If you've ever been to an ER, you've probably had one.
Yeah. So go back and look, you know, demand your images and look, I'm going to do a video and I'm going to put it on YouTube, how to read your own abdominal CT for visceral fat. And I'm going to walk patients through so they can just get those images. They go to medical records, demand those images on a CD. You know, they're your images. Read your own visceral fat, because your doctor probably doesn't know how to read it. Your radiologist isn't reading it. And so it's going to be up to you. And then maybe educate your physician provider. It's kind of sad, but I think that's what has to be done. So yeah, watch my YouTube channel for that link, and you can share it with your audience. Yeah,
that'll be a great tool. Yeah, I think the visual, like as a surgeon looking inside people's bellies, I mean, I could say, you know, it's crazy what we see inside there. And as a, you know, regular person, you don't. Quick question about that. What do you feel about the waist to hip ratio as like the cheap, like, is there, if you absolutely couldn't afford a penny to do an MRI or a CT scan, is there a way for someone to assess it?
Yeah. So that, I think it's a beneficial step. I don't think it's the other one. I'm turning my camera down because, this is a little bit strange, but I'm going to show you for your audience how they can assess visceral fat, mostly the influence. Okay. So you want to have these lines. You don't want them bulging out on the side. You want this line to be straight. When visceral fat is present, it bulges out here. And the other thing is it causes an anterior protrusion. So the sagittal abdominal diameter between the posterior surface in your back and the anterior surface of your abdomen, that diameter gives you an indication of both the quantity and the influence of visceral fat. So you can measure that and you can see how much is going on there. That's more effective than just the hip to waist ratio. So measuring the sagittal abdominal diameter with a ruler is an effective way to track that. But it's not just, I'll put my shirt back on. It's not just the amount of visceral fat you have. There's another really important factor. It's the exposure to it. So if I were to put in, let's say, 15 pounds of visceral fat within the intra-abdominal cavity of an individual, it would have absolutely no effect immediately, but over a period of time, it causes disease. So over the course of time, the exposure to all those inflammatory substances caused the harm. So I've scanned people have very little visceral fat and have a lot of chronic disease because they previously had a lot of visceral fat and now have gotten rid of it. And there's just a guy today on Twitter saying, well, I had a heart attack after, you know, going keto for 6 years and carnivore for 1 year. And then I have this massive heart attack. Well, you may have lost a lot of visceral fat, but dude, you're 57 years old and you had a lot of exposure to visceral fat that caused a lot of harm. And so, you know, the notion that you can immediately change your life, you know, through just a dietary change overnight, conflicts with the fact that that harm was accumulated over a long period of time. So the sooner you begin your steps towards becoming healthier, the faster and the more powerful your optimization goes. So that's a poor man's, I call it the poor man's MRI, is doing the sagittal abdominal diameter. And the other interesting thing is you can be 60 years old with very little visceral fat and your stomach sticks out and you get this little pouch, and that's sarcopenia. So your structures of your anterior abdomen just simply have poor tone. They can't hold your guts in anymore. 18-year-olds, 20-year-olds that have maybe a lot more visceral fat than that 65-year-old, their muscles are so good that they just keep it all in there. And that's why, you know, the youthful 18, 20, you know, to 24-year-old range have these really flat abdomens because they lack sarcopenia. So the other scourge besides visceral fat I like to talk about, form of chronic disease, is sarcopenia. So it's this terrible loss of muscle mass along with terrible lack, a loss of performance of that muscle mass. You're not as strong and it doesn't do as good of a job. So, you know, you see these guys with sagging, and women too, sagging muscle tissue, no tone, completely opposite to you, Jamie. So it's sarcopenia is just insidiously developing within their bodies. And we need to address that. And almost nobody's talking about it.
I love it. Okay, so let's talk about actionable steps. Somebody gets a scan done. They have a ton of visceral fat. How do they get rid of their visceral fat?
Yeah. So the first thing I tell them to do, I mean, the number one thing we saw that had the biggest impact on visceral fat was eliminating processed foods. And I have a lot of images in my Instagram account and my Twitter account and my YouTube channel going over what happens when you, in a series of 8 scans, when you eliminate this processed foods, how quickly it eliminates visceral fat. So that's step number one. And most of that is going to be from processed oils and carbohydrates that come in processed foods. So eliminating, making sure an attentive, diligent approach to make sure that you don't have those things in your diet is critically important. In that scan, the person that I showed that is demonstrating that didn't exercise 1 minute. So it really shows the importance of diet. I mean, you just cannot put bad food into your body and expect that you can exercise yourself into a healthy condition. You're not going to be able to optimally get yourself healthy. You may be able to lose fat, but it's going to be super inefficient and not an optimal manner. Now, having said that, one of the things that does help to really vanquish visceral fat from an exercise standpoint is sprinting. So you probably have noticed a lot of my material centers on this form of exercise. And in my opinion, it's my favorite form of exercise because nothing gets somebody more short of breath and requires greater effort in a shorter period of time than a maximum intensity sprint. And I use that term maximum to distinguish it from high intensity exercise or high intensity interval training. It's maximal intensity. A sprint doesn't happen unless you are running as fast as you can. And that, Jamie, is one of the things, one of the performance traits of Homo sapiens for 4 million years that kept us in the gene pool. How fast we could run, either to catch a prey that we were after to eat or to get away from a predator that was about to eat us or kill us. So sprinting is a survival trait. And I have noticed across every client I work with that their health, their level of health improves to the extent, and their sprinting improves to the extent that the level of health improves. That's what I meant to say. So I track sprinting. Every new client I get, I videotape them sprinting. They suck when they first get, you know, do a sprint. And then as you get rid of that visceral fat, Their form bet is so much better. They don't look like an old person running anymore. They perform a lot better. So sprinting is a really important step. And then one of my secret weapons is that I've really found out about is long-term fasting. So autophagy, you know, getting increase in chaperone proteins, which happen when you sprint, when you go into a sauna, when you go into a cold shower, when you do maximum intensity exercise, and when you fast. It all comes down to chaperone proteins, these heat shock proteins, these cold shock proteins that get released from doing really, really difficult things for short periods of time. So if you want to have a very insightful approach on how to really get a human being healthy, it's getting them to do really, really difficult things that produce these chaperone proteins in a short period of time, but not too much. And there lies the rub with distance running, because it doesn't produce as much heat shock proteins. It creates a lot of reactive oxygen species. And so I've gotten completely away from recommending any jogging or any kind of endurance exercise. And I've banded it basically down to these two primal instincts, sort of maximum intensity exercise. And the other trait that was present, it's difficult to kind of incorporate it into modern day humanity. And you can see how awkward this would be for patient conversation, but fighting. I mean, and we're not talking about, you know, entertainment fighting like you see on TV. I'm talking about life and death situations. So your husband would recognize this. In law enforcement, I had many fights. You know, people didn't want to go to jail. We'd be fighting for them in handcuffs. Only one where I thought I was going to die, where I was fighting for my life by myself. That was a physical form of exercise that I have never felt ever before in my life, and I never want to feel it again. So it is completely different. But that's what our ancestors faced for 4 million years, and that's what happens in the wild. To animals, they have this violent conflict where they're, you know, somebody's trying to eat another, or there's dominance, something going on to be the, you know, the alpha buck or something, and that's what both optimizes the species and keeps them in the gene pool, and it corresponds to the quality of life. So today, I don't recommend people going into bar fights and, you know, getting in life and death struggles. But you can lift weights, and you can do other forms of exercise in that kind of a maximum way, so that you can kind of mimic it. And so that's what I try to do. And hopefully, those are some good tips and some good content for people that are listening in your audience about getting rid of visceral fat. And they're going to find that when they do that, their health is going to improve, their performance is going to improve, their appearance is going to improve, and that's all really important so that they can be health evangelists. I'm all about trying to get people to be better influencers to encourage other people to be healthy. And you got to do that by improving appearance, and you got to do that by improving how you perform, so that people say, I want to be like Dr. Fit and Fabulous. I want to be like these other healthy people on social media that represent well the level of health.
I'm fascinated because I have a new book coming out. It's probably going to come out about the time this podcast drops, called Hard to Kill. And we talk about all those things, basically the diet, the sprinting, resistance training, not doing long distance running. We talk about sauna, we talk about the cold therapy. So I'm with you on all fronts there. When it comes to diet, you had mentioned, you know, a client or somebody on Twitter, keto carnivore. Do you think low carb ketogenic therapies are helpful for reduction of visceral fat? Can people just moderate carbs? Tell me kind of where you land there.
Yes, super interesting. So I do believe that a low carbohydrate diet is the preferential way for eating and for your audience and for us in the Western world, because we have so damaged our metabolic health from years of eating the standard American diet. But for the maybe the tribesmen who has never had processed foods, they could probably enjoy even a high carbohydrate diet. And so why do they, why can they do that? And well, one, they haven't destroyed their metabolic health. Well, why haven't they, if they've been eating a lot of carbohydrates, you know, fruits and dates and stuff. And by the way, if you took that young tribal person genetically, and you fed them just like fruit and dates and, you know, figs and things like that, over here, they would get disease here, but not in their home country. The reason, the microbiome. Mm. So these microbes that are resident within our gastrointestinal tract on our bodies that allow us to metabolize healthy food into an optimally healthy way. And so a great example are the Somalis in the Minneapolis community. The largest community of Somalis outside of Somalia is here in Minneapolis. They come here very thin, you know, from the movie Black Hawk Down, everybody calls them skinnies. They get here, they're like in their 20s, 30s, 40s, or 50s. They're very thin. They're eating the same way they eat in Somalia, they eat here, because they don't really assimilate into our communities. They eat halal in Somali restaurants, Somali grocery stores, eating the exact same thing they always did, and they get fat. Why? Microbes. The microbes from the American community, obesogenic microbes, are now being exposed to the Somalis who formerly could eat that food in their country, and it's causing obesity, obesogenic microbes. So it's the microbiome that's the big black box that a lot of physicians and medical science hasn't quite addressed, that they haven't figured out, because 70 trillion organisms, we don't know which ones are obesogenic, which one caused that. But that's what's going on. So, you know, for your audience, what does that mean? You want to cultivate the second interesting area you want to cultivate and interest in besides visceral fat is the microbiome. So you want to figure out, how do you optimize your microbiome? How do you not do harm to it? How do you encourage it to drive towards a direction that builds your health instead of contributing to disease? So I work with my clients, spend a great deal of time to optimize their microbiome and educate them about it.
Yeah, I think we're just scratching the surface of the microbiome when it comes to every area of health. I mean, in my world, gynecology, you know, the vaginal microbiome and its implications for maternal fetal health. And just, I mean, just it's a fascinating area. And okay, so we've talked about ways to reduce visceral fat, moderating carbs, doing sprinting, sauna, cold therapy, fighting for your life. I mean, that's really, like, at the end of the day, what we're talking about here is fighting for your life. I mean, it's a scary world out there. Yeah, it is. It is. Well, tell people, Dr. Amara, how they can find you, how they can work with you, what your social channels are, if they want to follow you.
Yeah. So I'm on Instagram, just like yourself, and you can find me on Instagram at DrSeanOmara, at Dr. Sean O'Mara. I'm also on Twitter that way. And I have a YouTube channel, just Dr. Sean O'Mara. And then they somehow Twitter or YouTube put an apostrophe in my O'Mara, O'Mara. But I'm the only Dr. Sean O'Mara on YouTube, at least right now. And I have a website that you people that are interested in reading more about how I operate and work with clients, that they can go to. And it's just DrSeanOmara.com. So www.drdrSeanOmara. And if you are somebody that's an alpha, you're in a profession where your livelihood is predicated on how well you perform, and you want to look better and perform better, I would be very interested in considering working with you to see if you might be a good fit for me.
I love it. I love it. Okay. You guys heard it all today from myself and Dr. Amara, the importance of visceral fat. So for the semen analysis today on go find out, figure out a way to measure your visceral fat. You might have to pay cash for a scan if you can afford that. Go do it. Your health and the rest of your life is worth it. It is absolutely worth it. And medicine is not coming to save you. The way that our healthcare system is set up, it's not going to give you a better life, and you're going to have to do this on your own. You're going to have to take some self accountability and responsibility. So Dr. Amara, thank you seriously for helping spread this message. I think people are going to find this really fascinating. Go check out his socials. I follow him. He's always posting these MRIs and these CT scans so you can see what visceral fat is. I think that is such a powerful tool. And you guys, it's impactful. So thank you, Dr. Amara, for being here today.
Well, thank you, Dr. Steeman. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and about this interesting message of health optimization. So thank you once again. Happy to always look for opportunities to speak to this issue.
Awesome. Well, thank you, guys. Make sure you download this episode, like it, leave your comments and questions that you have for myself, for Dr. Amara, and share it with anybody that you think would find it interesting, because there's people all over the world that need to know what their visceral fat is. Have a great day.